Today I want to talk about cleansing our consciousness. And also what's important with that is to be able to recognize when we're interacting with people who are not cleansing their consciousness. That's one form that protection is made available to us through awareness of when we're dealing with, quotes, saber-toothed tigers, end quotes. In Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, the idea of the ego expressing through the personality as four driving needs is explained. I had never seen that concept before. I saw plenty of human behavior, but I never really saw that or knew this idea that that's how the ego might express itself. Later on in the letters, Christ lists behaviors that we would want to cleanse from our consciousness if we intend to grow spiritually, if we intend to elevate our consciousness. Throughout the letters, he talks about the need to reach out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and asking for enlightenment. I think that statement in and of itself can make people think, oh, I've got to be like a monk in a cave, or I've got to be such a refined human being that is basically going to be impossible to me. But I think enlightenment really means to have insight or awareness of, or be able to see an answer to a question, a solution to a problem, or something that is shrouded in ambiguity or uncertainty becomes clear. I don't think of enlightenment as only this unbelievably advanced spiritual state that you might think about for Christ or some Eastern guru. Christ also says that there's no greater purpose than to seek to understand and experience the source of our being. It's like, oh, okay. So if that's the program, that makes a lot of sense. I think the main purposes of having a deep relationship with the source of our being is to fully realize that we are being supported by all times in our growth, nourishing and nurturing, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, and survival. I think the flow of these energies, and if you can imagine that we're in this ocean of consciousness and that these energies that I just named are flowing throughout this ocean of consciousness, and we can draw them to us, and in fact, they are seeking to come to us. So the flows of energy that are delivering these items to us and through us, right, they come to us, we translate them uniquely, and then we end up distributing or delivering those to other people. Those things are influenced by rhythm. We understand the concept, seasonality, high tide, low tide, night and day, whole bunch of things, ebbs and flows, not that difficult to understand. And these things are constantly at work in our lives. People who are frustrated all the time don't understand rhythm. I want the season to be a different season. I want the timing to be a different timing. It's like, okay, good luck with that. But besides this rhythm that shows this information, these energies being delivered to us, the law of cause and effect is an underlying factor. Now, we know from a physical life on planet Earth, gravity is an underlying factor to our behaviors. So if we understand gravity and we recognize its reality, we go like, okay, I'm not going to deny the existence of gravity. There'd be a lot of bumps and bruises if we did that. If we can understand that this spiritual law of cause and effect is happening, we'll have less bumps and bruises as well. I mean, just this idea to know and understand that this supreme intelligence, divine consciousness, that this ocean of good, this ocean of God, can be influenced by what we sow. We reap what we sow. Like, when I first read this in the letters in October 2014, or how about 2010, I was thrilled at that idea. I thought, what could be fairer? What could be a more level playing field than the law of cause and effect? You want something? Sow the seeds to it. You don't want something? Don't sow the seeds to it. As compared to some people are fortunate, some people are unfortunate, some people are good people inherently, some people are bad people inherently, and so on. Some people are chosen and the rest are not chosen. I never cared for that. This level playing field to me is incredibly appealing and, frankly, convinces me that the divine is loving and caring for its creation, that it's providing for the well-being of its creations. As we become confident and trusting in how creation works, and the other night on a call, somebody said, how do you get trust? I thought, and I said, you look for evidence of support. Look for these things, growth, nutrition, and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, and the law of cause and effect. Look around in your environment. Look for evidence and see if you find it. And if you find it, you go, oh, maybe it's true, maybe it's true, maybe it's true. And pretty soon, we can know how life works. We can know how creation works. And then, the feeling of trust to me is a natural conclusion of that process. And as we become confident and trusting that we're supported, that the divine is working for our well-being, working for us, in us, and through us, we're going to be in a position to reduce the ego's control over our thoughts, our feelings, our words, and our actions. Our spiritual progress, in which, let's say, we're able to balance our self-interest with other people's self-interest, is part of the process. Maybe that's kind of like a baby step. It's not really a baby step. It's big time. It's big. But as we practice that, I'm thinking of their self-interest. I'm thinking of my self-interest. I'm balancing that. I think it can grow into brotherly love, where other people's benefits, other people's needs, other people's growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, become available to our awareness. And if we were to continue and become really skillful at that, that is natural to our consciousness, natural to our awareness, then ultimately we would be thinking in terms of expressing unconditional love. Unconditional love. That's a tall order. That's a very high goal. But I say it's a good thing we've got multiple lives to work on that project, because it's probably going to take a bunch of them for us to even approach that level. If we can see the ego and divine consciousness as two points of view, I would say the ego tells us what's important, and it tells us what means to use to get what it says is important. Divine consciousness, expressing through Christ, would say, what is important is already available to us. Just went through that list. Growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, operating under the spiritual law of cause and effect. It's already available to us. And what we can do is to allow those important things into our lives. Ego says one thing, divine consciousness says another. The agenda of the ego is to protect the sense of our individuality. And its game plan is to use the four driving needs as its strategy. Hey, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Christ says that divine consciousness is already protecting our individuality. It's designed. And the game plan is balancing our self-interest with the self-interest of others. the ego would say, whoa, you know, my tools are used to satisfy the four driving needs, which are important. And those tools are criticism, judgmentalism, denigration, slander, violent impulses, double and devious dealings, sarcasm, intolerance, hatred, enmity, jealousy, aggression, thieving, and falsehoods. Gulp. Yikes. The means proposed by Christ to enjoy health, happiness, abundance beyond our human imaginations would be to reach out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment. And this activity we would be seeking to experience and understand our relationship with our source of being. If we knew we were always connected to what I've referred to from time to time as the superstore, the super source, the source of all that is, the source of all health, the source of all abundance, the source of all happiness, the source of all knowledge. It's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. If we were to do that, I'll say the small-mindedness of the ego would give way to the expanded spiritual consciousness. And it is that expanded spiritual consciousness, that's who we really are, encased in all this energy that the ego has convinced us and others we need to have in order to be safe. We need to realize that we're designed to grow spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically, to be the master of our ego. We in the world will have terrible problems, and they're ongoing, you can see that, if the ego continues to be the master of human consciousness. We're going to master the ego, or it will be our master. The ego can be a useful tool, an asset, or it will be our slave master. If we look at the conflicts in the world, we will see evidence of the ego directing the behaviors of the combatants. If we look at the great disparity in wealth between the wealthy and the poor, you can do this in the United States, you can do it in every country of the world. You can do it country to country if you want to draw a comparison. And we will see evidence of the ego directing the behaviors on a personal level, on a state level, on a political level, economic level, and on a country level. Let's say that seeking balance is natural, because balance is natural, right? I want balance. You want balance. Yeah. Balance is natural, and we want it. You know why? Because it's less stressful than imbalance. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Scientists know this. Other people know this. You know this. I know this. In principle, and every single day, not only in a laboratory, but in our daily lives, we can see this idea. Osmosis, water flow, all kinds of things are obvious examples. If we were standing up, we would probably be standing on 2 feet, or standing with more weight on 1 foot and less on another, but maybe holding on to something and not falling down. Being in balance when we're standing is preferable to, say, falling down. It's like, oh yeah, that you know, got it, that's good. Yep. Besides balance and seeking balance being natural, growth and expansion are natural to us. Right? A single cell multiplies, now we've got 2 cells, now we've got 4 cells, now we've got 16 cells, 8 cells, all kinds of cells. Just, right? We've got this expansion, and you can see it politically as well. The white man came to America, and we expanded. That's probably not new news to Native Americans. The first Americans went, oh yeah, we're noticing they're expanding. And this is normal to have this growth an expansion. But when it doesn't take into consideration other people and beings due to this expansion, then we can run into problems. We can run into a problems. Is it, oh, they're expanding sugarcane fields and coconut groves in Brazil. Okay, that's one thing. And what is being disadvantaged by this expansion and growth? They're cutting down all the trees. They're displacing native tribes. They are killing native tribes. They are, what? You go, the expansion in one case is denying any responsibility or value to what is being displaced. Be one thing if we were talking about expansion in a vacuum. It's like, there's expansion in a vacuum. Nothing is being disadvantaged. But when we're talking about something expanding, it's like, who is there anything being disadvantaged or displaced or harmed by this? People who give birth to children, women, we would say, wait a minute. As the baby is expanding, growing and expanding, my figure is changing, and stretch marks, and discomfort, and you go, We accept it as a normal part of the process. But in cases where there is no recovery from that growth and expansion of one force or one group to the complete annihilation of the other, it's like, maybe that's not such a good idea. Maybe that is a problem. I could say that when you and I desire an object that we don't have yet, let's just think, you want a vehicle, you want a car, you want a home, you want something you do not currently have, that causes an imbalance. You go, that's right. Now, I'm seeking balance, right? Yeah, exactly. And that, I have a desire, I have a goal for something I don't currently have. It activates our beliefs, it activates our emotions, that in a healthy person is going to spur us, it's going to trigger some thoughts, some feelings, some words, some actions directed at achieving that balance. You know, that seems natural enough. Yep, it is. Now it's a question of, based upon our consciousness, what thoughts, feelings, words, and actions would I use in order to achieve my goal? Therein lies a big challenge. What means would we use? Four driving needs? Or would we cleanse our consciousness? Or how would we approach that? Well, this could be motivational to a healthy person, but in a not healthy person, I'll just characterize a person like that. That person's not hyphen healthy. When they think of something they desire, if they their images and their beliefs that are triggered say, I'm defective, they go into shame or apathy or depression or grief and sadness or fear or craving or anger, not so good. That's not so good. In an ego-driven person, this drive to achieve goals will give him access to lower vibrations, the same ones I mentioned before. Denigration, criticism, violent impulses. Hey, I can't really worry about that other guy or that other group or that other religion or that other race. I can't really worry about them. That's not my priority. My priority is to defend myself from criticism, emotional, physical attack, take the best for myself, come in first in the race of life, and keep everything that I've acquired for myself, no matter what other people try to do. Like, okay. The willingness to diminish other people and, frankly, other beings, you know, cutting down rainforests and so on, destroying the habitat of endangered species. But, yeah, it seems to come easy to ego-driven people. Because, why? Caring, fairness, justice, kindness, those kind of things, generosity, compassion, they're less available to their consciousnesses. Just, they look on their menu, and it's like, nope, I don't see caring, fairness, justice, kindness. That's not there. Those people would be so reactive they wouldn't consult the menu to see if they're there. They were like, boom, I want it, take it, want it, take it, want it, take it. Pretty caveman-like in many ways. While Christ recommends in letter 8 a process to cleanse our consciousness, this is where we would write out that list that I verbalized and put it on a sheet of paper and lay down and take that list and those words and the consciousness of those words into a meditation and ask divine consciousness to remove them from our consciousness. Kind of like going to the main gardener, if you will, and become vibrationally aligned where those things can no longer stick to us and in us, but will automatically be withdrawn from us. Like, wow, I like it. But it seems to me that besides that, this requires an ongoing effort of mindfulness. That is, being aware of what we're doing, what we're thinking, feeling, speaking, and how we're behaving. We need to be aware of our mental and emotional habits. And we need to be aware of the environmental signal that we're being exposed to, either by choice or just because we're living on planet Earth. Being aware, being mindful, is absolutely required. This idea of knowing which foods cause a stomach ache kind of is a parallel idea that I'd like to address. If you know a particular food or an ingredient or substance gives you a stomach ache, and you're aware of that, you're mindful of that, that when that stuff is present, you don't eat it. You go, no, thank you. I'll pass on that. This avoiding stuff that is harmful to us, if we're aware of it, becomes very easy. If we're not aware of it, though, it's like, oh, that's a little more complicated. I had this experience. Some years ago, I had some ice cream, and I got a stomach ache. I love ice cream. How can this be? I looked at the ingredients. Splenda was one of them. From what the hell is Splenda? Oh, wow, that's not good. Marianne went out and bought some other ice cream. And, this is whatever. I tried it. Stomach ache. Let me look at the ingredients. Splenda. And this happened one more time. Splenda. But I'm a man. It takes three times for me to get things. It's like, wow. Splenda. It's fake. It's synthetic. It's an energy pattern I don't ingest any longer. My body goes, not good. When people watch the 6 o'clock news and they get furious or depressed, they're not so quick to associate the ill feelings that they now have, anger, rage, depression, hopelessness, despair, right, with the synthetic news they just ingested. They think they feel terrible because of the content of the toxins that were just dumped into them. They think it's the people, the images of the people they saw on the screen that made them sick. No, it's the hatred and the lies and the racism and the violent images and the deceit that went into their minds and hearts that made them sick. And they thought, oh, no, it was the that race. It was that religion. That's what made me sick. I don't think so. We Americans say we're concerned about crime. Oh, crime, 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 crime. We've got lots of police. We've got lots of prisons. Actually, we have more people in prison than any other country on the planet. That's how much we care about crime. We make laws, so we have more crimes. We got lots of laws. We got lots of lawyers. We also have an unbelievable number of television shows and movies devoted to showing gruesome images of crime, violence, man's barbarity, all kinds of awful things, man's inhumanity to man. It's like, and no correlation, no connection is made between what's happening on the streets and what's happening on the screens and what's happening in our minds and hearts. No, they're completely unrelated. Wow. Here's the trouble with consciousness. These harmful, synthetic images, when they're delivered and accepted into the individual consciousness of the viewer, oh, I'm sitting here innocently watching rape and serial killing and murder and treachery and yeah. These things enter, that image, that consciousness enters the human consciousness. We just got infected with consciousness forms. And these things start to grow. For the average person, it's like, really? I didn't understand that. But the people doing it, they completely understand it. We get influenced by those consciousness forms that just got planted, or we willingly ate. And they start to grow and grow. Besides influence, they can actually control us. When you look around and you read something or you see it sensationalized about this murder of school children or people going crazy with guns in high schools and colleges, you know, let me think. Was that person propelled by consciousness forms of love and compassion and forgiveness and generosity and kindness? Or violent impulses, hatred, revenge, and worse. I'll make that rhetorical. These people are under the influence of these consciousness forms. It's like they're robots. They're robots, and they become incredibly destructive. When we consider those mass killings in TV or movie theaters or school settings, and how about police brutality, that's the rage on TV. Well, it's been around for plenty of time. But now, because of the internet, this stuff can be communicated virally. And there's no surprise with that word, virally. I'll say virulently. All of this behavior of the police and other perpetrators, the shooters, they're infected with these consciousness forms that were planted and nurtured and watered by our system. About 5 or 6 years ago, I realized that consciousness forms can immediately make me feel sick. It caught me as a surprise. I had this point of view, you know, I'm pretty tough, I'm pretty macho, I'm pretty cerebral, I'm pretty balanced emotionally. That stuff doesn't affect me. But consciousness forms are like eating bad things. Watching bad things, listening to bad things, is exactly like eating bad things. Now, I like Roman history. I'm not sure why. Maybe past lives. I don't know. But I took Latin in high school. I liked it. And I was raised as a Roman Catholic. And I was an altar boy when Latin was used in the church. So, you know, I have this exposure to Latin from a couple of different angles. So, Roman history. That's cool. That's cool. Well, there was a TV series on HBO called Rome. This is cool. I'm going to watch this. This is interesting. Let me see what this is, what Rome was like. So I watched the first episode, and afterwards, I didn't feel well. Next week, same thing happened. Second episode. Well, I'm a man, as I said. So it took me the third episode, and then I realized, I think these images, the stuff I'm watching on TV, is making me sick. This TV series showed all the worst characteristics of human behaviors. If you watched that, you would go, could I belong to another species, please? I don't want to be like these people. This is, yikes. These people, this species is terrible. This is terrible. Everything that Christ says that we need to cleanse from our consciousness was shown in this series as common, standard, expected behavior. It's like, wow. And it was shown in graphic detail. It's like, wow, images plus emotion, boom. Images plus emotion, boom. Like, wow. And here I was eating this stuff through my eyes and ears and feeling awful. Once I went, I watch this, that's the cause and the effect, don't feel well. Watch this, cause, don't feel well. I got the cause and effect relationship pretty quickly. Well, for normal people, they were like, it took you 3 episodes, took you 3 hours over a course of 3 weeks to get that. And that might be in the slow category. But once I got it, I went, wow. Consciousness forms. Toxicity make you sick. I've had clients tell me about their viewing habits. I said, well, you know, I'm depressed and then I'm angry. I was like, tell me what you do. Oh, my life is good. Yeah, well, what's going on? Oh, I watch the 6 o'clock news. Why do you do that? Oh, yeah, you have to be informed. And how do you feel afterwards? I'm depressed or angry or pissed off or this or that. I was like, I don't think that's a good idea to watch that. Oh, I have to be informed. You're not really being informed. You're being played. You're being manipulated. You're being fed according to somebody else's agenda. Really? You know, this is not true? Everything on Fox News is not 100% true? It's not 100% true on any station. You might want to give that up. Figure out another way to get informed or decide on what you want to know and do it without the television. Here's another idea about cleansing consciousness. I got a glass of water and it's dirty. The water is dirty. There are a couple of approaches at least that I could take with this. One is I could, little by little, extract the dirt from this. Maybe tweezers or something. Just, I'll take the dirt particles out of this glass until ultimately, whew, I've got a clean glass of water. Or I could take that glass of water and I could forcefully add more clean water to it. I could, you know, turn on the faucet or a hose or something and it flushes out all the dirt, and then I'm left with a clean glass of water. That would be akin to adding high vibration consciousness forms to our consciousness, which is part of that same process that Christ reveals. He said, well, once you can cleanse your consciousness of the stuff, the denigration, sarcasm, criticism, and violent impulses, etc., what you're going to want to do is create a list and put it on a piece of paper and then take in the consciousness of these higher vibration forms, these ideals that you would like to have a part of your consciousness. Like, you got to figure it out for yourself. I'm not going to give you that list, he says. Figure it out for yourself. Write your own list. And then ask divine consciousness to help you incorporate those vibrations into your consciousness so you live life using these as your guidelines. Like, okay. That sounds like a great idea. And to me, that's similar to this idea of adding clean water. Of course, Christ is saying you do it gently. That water scenario, I'm using it forcefully to flush this other stuff out. And now that I've said that, you could say, I guess like watching the 6 o'clock news would be like adding dirty water or adding more dirt to the glass of water. I think so. Now, I said there were two ways to do it. You're like, whoa, wait a minute. There are more than one, more than those two ways, more than taking the dirt out, more than flushing the dirt out. Why don't you do something besides extracting the particles and adding clean water? Why didn't you just empty the dirty contents? And my answer is, that's the purpose of death. Death lets us empty the contents that we've acquired and haven't been able to eliminate or release from our consciousness in our lives. And because we didn't cleanse from this stuff, we have encumbered our consciousness, which encumbers our thinking, which encumbers our feelings, which encumbers our bodies, which makes death seem like a good idea at points. I believe it's those lower vibration consciousness forms that disrupt the functioning of what I just said, mind, emotion, body, and now we're at a point like death seems like a good alternative to this life that now I'm experiencing. Yeah. I recently signed up for a webinar that's going to be held in the middle of September. I used to subscribe to a publication called Ode, O-D-E, but nobody knew what that meant, so they changed the name to The Optimist. Anyway, they're sponsoring this guy. He's a researcher who believes people can live more than hundreds of years. Now, to me, living to be 120 and healthy is something that I want to promote. I'm very interested in this guy's viewpoints. He's a serious researcher about how to live hundreds of years. But in a video that I watched as in preparation for this, it is clear that cleansing the body so it can repair is essential. We change the oil in our cars. There's no mystery there to us. Why do you change the oil in your car? Because the junk in the oil wears the machinery down. Oh. And we can understand things because we're five sense oriented. I see the particles and the dirt and metal filings. I got it. Cleansing is essential to us. I watched a fictional movie. I used to belong to the spiritual cinema circle that they would put out spiritually oriented, upbeat kind of movies. And when they started to move away from that, I discontinued my membership. But after a number of years, one of my favorite movies was a story of a guy who was immortal. And it goes like this. He would live in a town, he'd move into a town and get a job, you know, a highly intelligent job like a professor because of his wisdom, because of all of his lifetimes, all the information and knowledge he's acquired. But when people, after a 10-year period, go, this guy is not aging, and then they start questioning, he packs up, quits his job, and leaves town. So it was this circle of friends trying to convince him to stay, and they wanted to know why he was leaving, and he's forced now to tell them the truth. He's immortal. And they argue about it, and they fight about it, and da-da-da-da-da-da. The very interesting conversations that occur with this. But his explanation is the reason he's able to live all these years and centuries was because somehow his body has the ability to cleanse itself. You and I would say there's way more to living healthily than cleansing the body. We would say we have to cleanse the consciousness. The body is actually a symptom of our consciousness. So we would start by cleansing our consciousness, and then our thinking is more enlightened, less acquisitive, less friction-filled, less harmful, less rejection-oriented, less resistant, so energy flows, and the same with our emotional bodies, and then our physical bodies, as a result, is going to be so much better off. We would say our physical bodies need our consciousness to be cleansed. Eating energy that is bad for us is bad for us. Oh. Eating energy, consciousness forms that are good for us are good for us. Love and everything related to that vibration is good for us. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us. For you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.